Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, a safe place for leading with your heart. Hey, thanks for being here. You, Me, Empathy is the official podcast of the Feely Human Collective, a collaborative mental health community designed to empower each of us to grow our capacity for empathy, vulnerability, and emotional wayfinding. Just a friendly reminder that this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and is not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. No one is just a silly boy with a feely heart. You can support the show by leaving a review in Apple Podcasts, following us on social media at Yumi Empathy and Feely Human, and joining the Feely Human Collective community at feelyhuman.co. And now your host, Noan Wells.
Hello, Feely Humans. Welcome to another episode of your favorite mental health podcast, You Me Empathy. My name is Noan. I'm the creator and host. I'm also the founder of the Feely Human Collective at feelyhuman.co. This is episode 176 with my very special guest, Aaliyah Walston. Aaliyah is a tarot reader. She is a spiritual alchemist. She is a lovely Feely Human. I was so grateful to sit down with and talk about holding space for multiple truths and understanding that your experience is not that of everyone else's, creating boundaries with family, and why you, yes, you listener, and me, and all of us really, are the spell. You are the spell. We'll get into what that means in this episode. I hope you enjoy it. Before we get to it, though, I wanted to remind you that on May 20th, wow, it's already May. On May 20th, so in just a couple of weeks, the very first sort of other than me led Feely Human workshop is coming to the Feely Human Collective. It's called Treasures and Talismans. It's on May 20th at 11 a.m. Pacific time, and it's led by my friend, author, and teacher Janet Reich Elsbach. It'll be a three-hour workshop where we explore the meaning and message in the keepsakes we value, and we'll invite these mementos to shine like mirrors and offer back self-love in surprising ways. I'm very excited for this workshop. I will be there. Janet will be leading, but I will be there to, I don't know, make funny faces in the background. No, I won't do that. I will be there in full support, and I'm so excited to be a part of it. It's only $20. I really hope you can make it. Later this week, Janet and I actually will be doing an Instagram live over at Feely Human, if you want to check that out, I think on Thursday. But yeah, May 20th, go to feelyhuman.co, and you'll see, the workshops tab in the navigation and click on Treasures and Talismans. I hope you can make it May 20th. RSVP, on the website. And feelyhuman.co is also where you can find all of the show notes for this podcast, as well as a journal. If you're a journal person, if you like to write, if you like to create poetry, I'm looking for new writers. So check out the journal at feelyhuman.co. And also the shop. I've got a shop. I've got t-shirts, Feely Human t-shirts, and Yumi Empathy t-shirt, and pins, and an Empathy for Kids zine, and stickers, and all sorts of other fun stuff. So if you want to support me, that's a fun way to do it. Go to feelyhuman.co/shop. And another way to support me is on Patreon, patreon.com/feelyhuman. I release bonus episodes every month, as well as we have monthly hangs for the $10 and up folks, monthly hangs on specific topics. Like last week, we talked about what getting back to quote unquote normal looks like. And we talked about masks and vaccinations and all of that stuff. So check that out. Feelyhuman.co is where you go for the show notes and all of this stuff, as well as my Patreon is patreon.com/feelyhuman. And finally, the thing that you can do that truly is just takes a minute or two, doesn't cost you any money, is to leave a rating and review for this podcast on Apple Podcasts. If you haven't done that, please do it. I love when you do, and it does truly help out the show. So thank you. Okay, let's get to this episode. Let's get to episode 176 with my wonderful Feely Human guest, Alia Walston. Welcome to You, Me, Empathy, the official podcast of the Feely Human Collective. On this show, we explore the struggles, the triumphs, the brights and the darks we face as humans trying to get by on this wondrous and overwhelming pale blue dot. The intent of You, Me, Empathy is to talk openly without judgment about our mental health, our neuroses, our shared anxieties and worries, to create a dialogue that is vulnerable and deeply human and empathetic, and to share that dialogue with others to inspire emotional and cognitive collaboration and insight so we can, hand in hand, break down the stigma that make us feel shame and guilt for struggling, for feeling our feelings, for being feely humans. You, Me, Empathy is a safe, friendly space designed to inspire the beauty in each of us. Today, I am apparently the spell, and so delighted by this because I'm here with Tara Reader, astrology guide, liberator of victimhood, and spiritual coach, Alia Walston. Hello, Alia.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good. Good to hear. So, Alia, so grateful to have you here. The listeners might find this fun to know that I did a reading with you some time ago. I don't know, months ago, sometime in the pandemic, and it was delightful.
It was delightful connecting with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get into it, Alia. We always kick off the show with an emotional check-in. Let's ask this question. How are we feeling? How are you feeling?
That's a great question. You know, it's a complex, and I have a complex answer to that, or at Please. Least it feels complex. I think a thing that I try to integrate and practice within my life is acknowledging that I am safe and cared for, and that ultimately all is well, that I am where I'm meant to be. And even if, you know, on a cosmic or on a cosmic scale, like all is well, and I, and in my soul, I know that there's also room to acknowledge that there is, that there can be challenges within that, and that I might not feel totally invested in the expression of the bright side all the time. However, I do accept that I am well, I am safe, while also acknowledging like it was hard to get up this morning, you know, although it was hard to get up yesterday morning. It's hard to engage with the world to a certain extent sometimes. But overall, I feel safe and peaceful and ready to face the complexity of life, even if maybe in an hour I might not feel that way, but that's how I feel right now.
I mean, I appreciate that. And I appreciate more and more of this. And I've been hearing more and more of just frank, honest reflection of the nuance of humanity and the acceptance of the bright and the dark, and understanding that, like, hey, how I'm feeling right now in this moment may be different tomorrow. And I think that's, like, to me, my maybe sort of hopeful take on that is, like, we as humans are evolving in ways that allow for more nuance. And that's, I think that's truly like a good thing in the end.
Yeah.
Right.
We need that space. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's, cause it's, I mean, you know, you're in the world, you know, you live in the world as a human, you know, you're in the space of tarot and astrology, and you're on Instagram, and like, there are lenses of, you know, toxic positivity, and, you know, even in like systems like capitalism, right? There's like these notions of like, you have to glean something from this experience, right? It's like a forced positivity or forced like lesson you have to learn.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes there isn't a lesson. I find myself falling into those kind of loops as well, where I'm trying to find the root, trying to find the meaning, trying to find the guidance in some way. And sometimes that can be serving, and other times that can just be paralyzing and limiting. And it doesn't always allow you to actually just like be okay with what is, if you're always in the process of searching for a way to just like fix it, you know, or a way to spin it in some way.
Yeah. I was talking to Dr. Jessica Zucker about, she wrote this book called I Had a Miscarriage, and it's all about, you know, the trauma of pregnancy and the stigma around miscarriage. And there's something in her book, she said something along the lines of like, we as humans, so we kind of swiftly want to get to the point of normal after like trauma or after grief, where we're like, in a way, sort of bypassing the stuff that we need to process because it's uncomfortable, right?
I was just imagining like, what if we had a government that was equipped to speak to the emotional and spiritual things that are intertwined with like pandemic and being in quarantine and being able to give the space for folks to process reality as it is and acknowledge like what we are all going through collectively in this moment, and be able to recognize that we're not finished with this. And even when we're collectively as a country, like open again, so to speak, we still aren't going to be finished with everything that we have had to learn and process through this experience.
Yeah.
And like, just imagine like, what if we had that space to acknowledge that publicly, if that was like more accepted in society. It's getting there. And that's why I think one of the things that has been a thing we can have like a positive spin on this past year is that there's a lot more openness and a lot more talk and dialogue about mental health, emotional health, and spiritual health, and how that plays into how we show up for our lives.
Yeah. Yeah, I hope that happens too. I agree that we're getting better at it. And it does seem to come up really in like the past year, and almost like every episode of this podcast is exactly that. Is like, when, because I say it again and again, you know, there is much to be learned and much to be impressed upon and much to be explored, and many perspectives to challenge our own biases in all of that messy gray and all of the uncomfortableness that we as humans want to avoid because it's uncomfortable. But I find really one of the sort of guiding lights of my life, especially in my recovery and in my mental health and just me being a human on this planet, and I'm turning 40 this year, is this guiding light of like, get to a place where I can shed the stuff that I learned yesterday, get to a place where I can, you know, challenge my own biases, unconscious or otherwise, always, every day. And that's, you know, maybe some people would call that enlightenment. I just call it like, this is the human place you need to be, because like, it allows for more connection and healing and growth for individuals, for collectives, for communities, right?
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that is like the work, so to speak, is that presence and being willing to challenge your perception, and knowing that your perception is the guiding force for your experience, but your experience is not that of everyone else's. And mm-hmm. everyone else has, you know, like their birthright is to explore their perception and expression, even if that is opposed to yours. And if we all had that kind of integrated understanding of humanity, it would allow a lot more room for us to just be. It would feel a lot more peaceful, even though it feels contradictory in some ways or paradoxical.
Mm. Yeah. I had this, I'm wondering if you have had experiences like this yourself. And I feel like, just like as a addendum to my question that's forthcoming, I feel like you will relate to this, because a lot of people have had this experience, you know, especially people like yourself who are quote unquote doing the work, who are exploring and getting curious and trying to make that impact in their own communities, which is this, the experience. Recently, my family, my blood family is, let's call them challenging. And, you know, my parents, I don't have a relationship with my father. My relationship with my mother is kind of hit or miss. And I experienced something just a couple of days ago where, again, my mother proved very clearly to me that she is not capable of seeing me for who I am. Mm-hmm. And it's upsetting. But I'm also at a place now where I'm kind of, like, it feels good to tell myself, like, okay, known, maybe the boundary you need is to just not allow that in your life, you know? And maybe that's growth, maybe that's whatever, but like, have you experienced stuff like that? Cause like, you know, I want to grow and keep growing and learning and stuff. And when people in your vicinity are not, I guess doing the same thing in their own way, it's hard. You bump up against a lot of needs for creating boundaries, and you know, there's a lot of, you know, you just bump up against people that aren't doing the same thing, and it's difficult. That's a long-winded way to say, I wonder if you've experienced something like that.
Absolutely, very much so. And to speak to like the last little bit that you were saying too, it's like when other people aren't doing their own work and you're trying to be in relationship with them, especially if you're trying to move through conflict or trying to resolve something, mm-hmm. The person who is more on the path of self-reflection or self-awareness, they often end up doing more work in the process to connect to the person they're trying to remain in relationship with,
mm-hmm.
because you have that empathy aspect comes up, that ability to, when you're able to see yourself clearly and be present with yourself clearly, you can be present with other people and see what their needs are a little bit more clearly. So you're doing that dual work of processing your own emotional landscape while also being empathetic to their needs. And yet you're not necessarily getting that same kind of work reflected back at you.
Yeah.
With people that have not, that don't do that, you know, for whatever reason. And it's not like a value judgment on them either. Like, people are, they are allowed to have their journeys, whatever that might look like, whether it feels supportive or transformative to us or not, you know? But yeah, I very much understand what you're saying. Like, even like your specific example, like I have a challenging relationship with my family as well. So I kind of chuckled when you said challenging, because that's like exactly the kind of way that I would say it, which is like an understatement. It's like our polite way.
The diplomatic. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. So, I have a very similar thing. I am, I guess, technically like estranged from my family. I don't I don't stay in touch with them. I made a difficult choice a few years ago to have a boundary up with them because of that issue. I mean, my experience in life has been one, like, growing up and still to this day, just a very, 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 very sensitive person and just like a sponge for everyone else's emotions and feelings. And growing up and not knowing the difference between what I felt and believed, what was mine and what was other people's stuff. And as I kind of started stepping more into healing after having difficult youth and young adulthood, realizing that there is a difference that you can, like, just realizing what boundaries were. I didn't think I understood what boundaries were when I was younger. But as I started to work on that healing aspect of myself, I started to examine deeper those relationships in my life that I didn't feel that kind of support. I didn't feel like I was being seen or supported. And that was, and it was rooted in like my family relationships and my family dynamics.
So it's
a tough choice to make, but I found it for me personally to be one that is a necessity for my mental health and emotional health and wellness, to have that space and to know that that space needs to be upheld for the time being.
Yeah.
And however long that takes, however long that needs to be true is however long that needs to be true, years or whatever.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm sorry you've had to, maybe sorry is not the word. I guess I'm sorry. I feel for you and I empathize. Boundaries are hard, but like so essential in healing. And thank you also, Aaliyah, for sharing or reminding us about how we really need to have empathy for self before we can have empathy for others. Like we really need to do the work of knowing self and doing the work of loving self before like reflecting that outward. It's because to your very clear point, and it's something I've experienced personally, we get to a point where like, oh, like I'm a deeply sensitive person like you. Is that my feeling or someone else's? Like that's an experience I've had explicitly many times over, and it takes work to discern and curiosity to discern which is my feeling, which is another's. And that's tough work.
It is. And I love that you mentioned that curiosity aspect. Like that's everything, isn't it? That willingness to just be like, hey, what's up? And just ask instead of prescribe, you know?
Yeah. What's up? I like that. Yeah, absolutely. Are you open to talking about like the moment or maybe it was many moments of where you were able to draw that boundary with your family? Like if there was an inciting incident or anything of that sort?
I mean, it's many moments. It has to be. It'd be hard for it to just be one culminating moment, especially when it comes to family stuff, like
totally
biological family stuff. Like we are taught that family knows us more than anyone, that they will be there for us more than anyone. And that sort of ingrained belief system is not one that's easily given up. And part of it is because, you know, we need family, we need connection, you know, but we can of course define family to whatever that needs to be for us, you know, it doesn't have to be biological. But yeah, I guess I would say I was working in deep mentorship with my spiritual mentor, Michelle Sinnett, really powerful, clairvoyant, intuitive person. And we'd been working in deep mentorship for several months. And, you know, throughout my life, I knew that there was something that wasn't, didn't feel right in my relationships with my family. And in my mentorship, we kind of explored some of that stuff a bit. And I started to become more and more aware of the dynamics within my family and the roles that we all played. And I mean, I'm thinking of a specific example of like the last time when I was really like, okay, I'm very, very clear on the need for the boundary. Like there's left no sort of ambiguity in my mind about the need for boundaries. But it was something that took a process of years. It took 2 years for me to get to the point. I mean, 2 years, including, you know, the 31 years before that.
Yeah.
But, it was just like this moment where I, you know, I remember it clearly. I was talking on the phone with my mother, and I was in this kind of state where I was really trying to get her to understand why we had been separated for a couple years, or why I hadn't been speaking to them regularly for a couple years. And just like the it felt so necessary for me to reach that hand out and to like bring her along to fully see. And I felt like I did that with utmost sincerity, compassion, and as much presence as I could do for a very difficult, painful task. And I remember very clearly at the end of the conversation, I felt just utterly, 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 utterly drained. I felt like wrung out. I felt like someone had, like, just wringing out a towel, like a wet towel. I just felt like I had just been like scrunched and, you know, dried out in a way. And then at the end of the conversation, before my mom hung up, she said, "Well, I feel better." And I remember that response to her saying that she felt better because she felt better just because she had the chance to talk to me, period. What she needed was something very different than what I needed.
Yeah.
I was very, very aware that our needs were profoundly different. Like that connection even if it's in conflict, was important for one of us. And me maintaining my peace and my center was what I needed.
You know?
It wasn't enough just to be in dialogue. And that clarity of the difference of our experiences, the profound chasm between what we needed in that moment, was like the thing that helped me realize the choices that I need to make to continue to keep up the boundary and to take care of myself. Because like, and it wasn't like where I was like mad, like fuck you mom or anything. It wasn't like that. It was like, wow, she needs something so different than what I'm able to give her, you know, like, and I need something so different than what she's able to give me. And that is like the truth and the reality. And that's just like the first part of that of the boundary, you know, of the realization of the necessity of the boundary. That's the first part. And then the next part, of course, is the grief that comes up with it, where you're just like, oh shit, this is a total reframing of my understanding of our relationship right now. And now I need to be in a period of like change and transformation and letting go. And hence there's this grief here. So that was me trying to explain without giving like too much detail. And I hope that like made sense the way that I told that story, but
it does. And, yeah. And thank you for sharing it. It's, I think that's a pretty profound realization, that realization about what your mother needs and what you need and how those things can necessarily be different, you know, and recognizing those needs are like, that is tremendous insight. And I think, I'm wondering, like, you know, if your mother came away from that experience feeling that like, oh, like this is, you know, we're back to normal, or was she aware that, like, okay, this is, you know, the boundary is in place again, and you know, I might not hear from Aaliyah for some time?
Yeah, I don't think it was clear. it took a little bit more. At least to get the point across. But yeah, that's a different perspective.
I mean, I asked that because I think that's very maybe normal or typical in the sense of, like, you know, to your point before, like, you know, a couple of years, but plus the 31 years, like that is the true sort of, like, untethering we often sometimes have to do with our biological family, is like, there's this, you know, decades of imprinting and, you know, the stuff that we learn through our relationship with, you know, for me, like, it was like, oh, the narrative I had told myself was like, oh, I'm like the sweet, sensitive, like, mama's boy. And, you know, I maybe I'm still that way in some regards, but, like, I'm also, like, my own person. And in that space, there was a lot of, you know, emotional abuse and not so good stuff that did a lot of detriment to me, that I'm sort of unpacking and unlearning right now. And I think it's just such a, to your credit, Aaliyah, such a wonderful insight, the fact of this type of untethering and the boundaries with biological families are fucking hard because of all of that learning and unlearning.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So let's transition a little bit into something else. You said something on, maybe it's on your Instagram or somewhere on your website that I kind of love. I wholly love. And I'm wondering what it means to you. It's this: you are the spell. What does that mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked how you put it in at the beginning of the show too. Yeah, I mean, I am a magician, you know, like, we all are. But I guess speaking to the nature of the way I show up for the public and the work that I do, you know, I read tarot. I'm a spiritual. I've never said this on a podcast before, but this is like the words that came to mind, like a spiritual alchemist and like a transformational spiritual coach. I hadn't used the alchemist word before.
It's a good word.
Yeah. And, you know, my understanding of our existence is that, you know, humans, we are all manifestations of all that is of divinity in some way. And our lives are expressions of divinity, and all the complexity that divinity like holds as well. And so when I say you are the spell, that means that how we show up for our lives, that reflects what we call into our lives as well. And just you are the spell is also like a way to empower us to see us as magic makers in our lives in every day. Like our thoughts have meaning and have weight. They're real energy. Our emotions are the same. Our actions are the same. And so when I say you are the spell, like, we cast spells in our words and in our actions and in our beliefs. And so when you recognize that power that is inherent to our existence, then you see the magic in everything. You see the possibilities in our humanity and just showing up and just like being who we are.
I love that. It's so it's such a compassionate lens, I think.
Yeah.
With, you know, with how to look at other humans and the world, you know, recognizing the capacity we all have for magic making, I think is very compassionate.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. And it's interesting compassionate for some reason, as you're saying it now, it feels like I want to make clear to whoever might be hearing this too, that like compassion isn't just like niceness. You know, it's not, yes, it's not being nice. Niceness and being compassionate don't even have to be the same thing in one moment. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. the nice thing to do might not be the same as a compassionate thing to do. Mm-hmm. And so when we're talking about compassion, like compassion is like super fucking powerful. Like compassion is like, is boundaries too. Like compassion 100%. Is like respect for all life as it is. It's like really powerful, you know?
I do. And I thank you for saying that. And that's definitely how I meant it. It like when I think of you are the spell, I think of like, wow, I feel seen, but I also feel a great weight of responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. Like I see something online that says, be kind. And kindness is great. Kindness is wonderful. But I want stuff, words, language, action, intent, impact, all of it to hold all of the weight that you are the spell holds, which is the complexity of the human spirit and condition and the boundaries and all of the magic that we hold, which is a great, you know, capital R responsible thing that we all hold and we need to take seriously.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Responsibility is a thing that has been coming up a lot in the last year for me. Mm. Just, you know, from our own personal growth journey. And yeah, responsibility. I mean, I think that's one of the things that is scary about compassion and about presence is that it asks you to do more work than checking out does, or, you know, a prescriptive kind of mindset does. Mm-hmm. It asks for you to be able to see nuance and to be able to carry your own shit and know not how to not like hurt other people just because you're hurting, or learning how to, you know, move through life without having to have power over someone, you know, like it's a responsibility is something that asks for you to really show up and be one of my other mentors, Jeanette Lewis. She was talking about like the inner elder, like the importance of like the inner elder to take care of our inner child too, and our present selves as well. I think like when I first started doing spiritual work, inner child stuff was really important, and it still is very much so. And that need to like connect to that ecstatic version of yourself, and also having that inner elder be one to show up and be like, okay, inner child, I know you're feeling these big things. I know you're exploring these big things, and we also have to know what the structure is for us. Like, what is the container for us to safely play and move in? What are the like rules we need to be able to have space to play? And so like understanding those roles and the responsibility to self, we have a responsibility to do that playful inner child stuff, but also to make it safe for us to be able to do that stuff at the same time.
Yeah. Safety is huge. Mm-hmm. What does safety look like to you?
Oh God, such a good question. I'm an astrologer, so I think a lot of in terms of astrology things. I'm a Scorpio sun, and my moon is in Taurus. So Taurus moon, the moon, your moon placement in astrology is typically where your needs are, and it's also how we connect to our emotional selves. And my moon is in Taurus. Taurus is an earth sign. It's very, very sensuous and connected to the physical aspects of life. So for me, in terms of safety, I really like, I'm like looking around my apartment and I was like, I need like a nice bed. I need to feel comfortable in my bed. I need to have like a full fridge, of foods that I know I love. I need to have my own bathroom as well. Like, don't share that space with anyone else. And I need beauty. I need like flowers, pretty things. That's like the physical stuff I need in the world. Of course, connection, friends. But in terms of like how I care for myself, what feels safe for me, emotionally and spiritually, is that compassion piece, space to be alone and to travel astrally, to like dream, daydream and night dreams. And the other thing that helps me feel safe, and I sometimes have to remind myself to continue to practice this, is just like that we were talking about before, compassion and curiosity. That openness and availability for me to be willing to hear myself and to let myself live without judgment. The without judgment piece is the big part. Those are the things that make me feel safe ultimately.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. I think about safety a lot because I think you're right. Like, it is it is crucial, you know. It's not like I'm thinking of, like, you know, maybe the beautiful work you're doing, and you know, to do that in a space that doesn't feel safe or seen or supported is they just don't, like, those things don't match up very well. Like, I think safety is a crucial part of our growth. You know, I think about, like, growing up, and maybe you relate to this, growing up not always feeling safe. And when we don't feel safe, we create survival tools, right? We create guards, or we build guards around our heart. We create mechanisms that, you know, maybe we shut down, or we build armor up, you know, and it serves us and then it doesn't serve us. And those things are hard to shed. But when we do feel safe and seen and loved and supported, you know, maybe sometimes we don't have to build up all that armor.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The armor is really hard to shed, though.
Yeah. Do you have some armor you're still trying to shed?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I don't know if I'll ever shed all of it.
Yeah, that's true. Type, it is a life journey.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm always trying to practice being softer. And friendlier. I really like people. I like hearing about different experiences and different perspectives. And I am also someone that is like, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'll blame, again, my astrology. I'm being silly in that phrasing, blaming my astrology, but being a Scorpio sun and like I'm a Capricorn rising, there's an aspect of me that is kind of like, okay, this is my, I need space from anyone else and their energy, the outside world and their energy. And there's a part of me that also kind of like, it's like, okay, who are you as you show up to me now? I like to feel into people and see what they're about. And so I think sometimes I can feel intimidating to people where I don't perceive myself as like soft necessarily. I'm compassionate. I can be kind, but not always like soft. I think I give the people the feeling of softness and safety, but I don't necessarily feel soft all the time either. So there's like an aspect of me that could be a little bit more, you know, a little bit gentler with the outside world. But
hey, that's interesting, because I, you know, my limited experience with you and then just talking to you now, you know, you're open, you know, you're vulnerable, you know, but you also, like, I recognize, and maybe this is what you're talking about, like a little bit of a guard up. And I don't think that's like a bad thing. I think it's maybe we just don't know each other that well. You know, I think that's like a, like I do it. Like, it's such a human thing. Like I think we can have a bit of both, right? Like, mm-hmm. sometimes we do need to have those guards up, you know, and still maintain them to feel safe in our own bodies, you know, and then sometimes the, you know, softening serves us too, you know, but like, I think maybe there's space for a little bit of both, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. I had a feeling you were going to say that, because when I say things like that, people usually respond in a similar way that you do. but you know, perception.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my goal always is just to make my guests cry uncontrollably on this podcast. I'm just kidding.
That would be impressive if you got me to do that.
No, it's definitely not my intention. so, you know, one of the things that I want to talk about that you're doing right now is this program called Come As You Are. And first, just tell me what that means to you, like that statement, and then tell me and the listeners a little bit about like what the program's about.
Yeah. Come As You Are it's a mentorship program that I created. It's a 4-month long group mentorship program that is about investigating our belief systems, how we have integrated our belief systems, and how we can learn to like unpack what is ours versus what belongs to someone else, or mm-hmm. things that are outdated or no longer serving us. And with Come As You Are, my emphasis, and this is similar to the idea that is present in You Are the Spell, is this idea of showing up as you are with no judgment, welcome and available and curious for the spiral of your personal soul journey. And so Come As You Are is really just like, to me, when I see it in my mind's eye or my astral eye, it's like you showing up, someone showing up. Maybe they're nervous or unsure. Maybe they have some judgments about themselves, or they're on the precipice of unlocking something transformative within themselves that helps them feel a sense of peace and centeredness, even through challenging and difficult emotions. And when I see these people show up, it's like being able to show up with open arms, like you as you are now, feeling unsure and secure, but open and willing to take a journey. How fucking exciting and beautiful is that? Like, the sun is shining, the flowers are all around you, and you're ready to step into this like new journey. So grateful for you to be here as you are right now, as we evolve and grow together. So yeah, I mean, my whole mission in life is to bring greater awareness to like love and love consciousness and the power of the seed and the plant and the root of love within us, and how that connects us ultimately. And Come As You Are, to me, is meant to be a very deeply loving program, an excavation of love and centering it within our lives.
Mm. It sounds amazing. you know, the way you describe it, it sounds so yummy and juicy and just what we need. It's what we need as humans, is to be able to show up just as we are. And the more spaces like that we create, the more of all this stuff we're going to be able to be curious about and feel safe enough to do so.
Yeah. The world is changing in really profound ways, as we're all seeing very acutely right now. Mm-hmm. And I think the more that we're able to show up for ourselves, I keep saying show up, but I mean, it's true. That's just like what keeps coming out, keeps being channeled, is this idea of just being present and being here. Like the more that we're able to just be here with what we are, the more agency we'll have in the shaping of the changing nature of our world. Not like we don't have to be passerby in this experience. Mm. Like we are active co-creators of this world. So let's get in it. It's like my thought, you know?
Yeah. It's scary and empowering, like, because it is a reflection of, like, we each can contribute. Mm-hmm. You know, we each play a role in this.
Exactly.
Yeah, and choosing not to is a choice in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
That's big, yeah. Choosing not to is a choice as well. It's not passive.
Right. So we're talking a lot here about showing up as we are, taking up space, you know, having the safety to do these things. I wonder for you, Aaliyah, like, what has that personal journey been like for you? Because I know for me, I still struggle deeply with, like, the limiting beliefs of, like, you deserve pain and you don't deserve to be seen and loved and all these things, because these mm-hmm. were the patterns that I imprinted upon myself growing up. And, you know, the way you share is so rich and beautiful. And you know, I'm so grateful that you're giving that space to others. And I wonder how the personal journey of giving that space to yourself has been, you know. If you want to share maybe some moments or some specifics in that.
You know, I teach and I share about what I experience on a personal level. The things that I share are things that I need to hear. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's like the thing I needed to hear, like as I'm saying it, you know, like in that moment.
Sure.
So I think it's really important to remember, like, people that work in healing arts or are insightful or caregivers, like, the insight and the knowing is not something one is necessarily just born with. Like, it comes from having denied myself or been denied my full expression. And all of the misery and hardship that can come from that. I feel grateful that now in this point of my life that I don't think misery is not a word that I would use to describe the challenges I can move through at all. It does not describe it. But a thing that I do have that still kind of lingers within me, like, I am someone that suffers from depression, or suffers from depression, who experiences depression, who experiences anxiety. I have ADHD. I have physical health, chronic illness stuff. The depression I have been experiencing over the last few months has been really profound, really challenging to move through and to take action in. And part of that experience, was trying to see, like, how much did I actually need to be out in the world and how much did I actually need to just, like, rest and care for myself. And so the inner dialogue of, oh, I should be doing more, I'm supposed to be doing something different, why am I so sad, the all this stuff, you know.
Yeah,
those kind of feelings. I have a lot of I experienced a lot of fear around putting myself out there. It can be hard for me to just, like, okay, here I am, I'm just going to be myself and just say it without, like, I'd like to have, like, encouragement. Like, I often can kind of be like, get into a mindset where it's like, oh, if I only had this thing or this person, and then I could be like this in the world.
It'd
be
sure.
easier for me to do it if I had a partner, a romantic partner or a business partner, or, you know, like, yeah. There's just, like, a million different things. I mean, a lot of my stuff is around anxiety and feeling like I can, like, be present in the physical world and not just like engage with this stuff on a level of feeling, but also really, really embodying it. Like I'm in the practice, like my journey lately, as I've kind of gotten a greater handle on the theory, I'll put it that way. That's one way to put it. As I've gotten a better handle on the theory, now it's like, okay, how do we put this in practice? How do we embody it? How do we do this in day-to-day life? Mm-hmm. And the embodying part can be hard. Like, it's not always easy for me to be, I'm a daydreamer. I like to escape. Like, it's not always easy for me to be, okay, 2 feet on the ground.
Right
here, I'm a person. People perceive me. People see me. People hear the words I'm saying. It's not just all this dreamy kind of experience. Like, no, I show up. I take up space. I also need to receive money as a way to live on this planet. You know, this is like,
yeah.
It was something, some quote I saw. I don't remember what the quote is, but what they were speaking to, as you evolve or as you grow more and more on your path, so to speak, it becomes more and more about the fundamentals, less just about like the, you know, the, it's less about the more abstract stuff and more about just like making sure that you've got your foundation set, you're drinking enough water, that you have structure in your life, that you're getting enough sleep. Like all those kind of things are things that I have always struggled with, but I'm much more aware of my need to do those things right now and how I take care of myself and create structure for myself in the physical realm reflects my spiritual and emotional health as well. So yeah, it's just like in some ways over the last few months, I've felt like I've reverted in some ways. Like I felt like I turned into an angsty preteen and teenager again that has like, and I just had to learn how to, and that's like a good thing and a bad thing. Like angsty preteen was like outspoken as fuck and like did whatever they wanted. Not did whatever they wanted. That's absolutely not true. But like showed up in a certain kind of way that was a little bit more fearless because they didn't know the consequences of their action, you know, just yet.
Yeah.
But then there's also that other part that's can be kind of like victim-y and just like, I don't know what to do, or just feeling like you don't have agency. So my journey lately has been remembering that I have agency, sticking to my foundations and knowing that moving through another depressive phase doesn't mean I've failed. You know, this is just another stop on the spiral. I'm revisiting things that I've learned before with new tools, new ways of approaching it. And so there's growth still there. It's okay if, you know, I've had to check my work, so to speak.
Of course it's okay. Yeah. I mean, I feel you on the depression stuff. I have clinical depression myself and it's, I feel as though like to your point about checking your work, like there is a lot of that. I think it almost like, maybe it's like the person who has a child and then they're like, you know, in the moment they're like, I'm never going to have a child again, you know, natural birth or whatever. And then there's like this, you know, you hear about this, like there's some like drug in their system where they forget about the pain and awfulness and trauma of that experience. And they're like, I want another, right? It's like, it's almost like that in a way where like, we just have to go around the merry-go-round a number of times to figure out the tools, figure out the stuff. And sometimes we forget and sometimes we need to forget almost. Like sometimes we just need to kind of have a moment of like, okay, I just need to like move through this and the next time I'll maybe pay more attention or have more curiosity in it.
Yeah. Allow yourself, and even just like, even if the next time you still quote unquote do it wrong or fuck up or whatever kind of limiting language we might use that's easier. Like, it's okay. Like, I have that with myself too, like being more more attuned to my intuition when it's speaking to me and not denying it, not pushing it down and saying that it's irrelevant. I have that with just like basic little things, like throughout the house, I'll get like an intuitive ping, like, oh, why don't you move that thing over here? And I'll be like, it's not a big deal. Whatever. It's just my intuition. And then, you know, something will spill, that thing will spill, you know? Mm. And it's just like, well, I'll get in my head and say, oh, if I'd only listened to my intuition, like, why didn't I do that? And start getting this spiral of beating myself up about it. And then when the next time comes, the next opportunity comes, why would I choose the intuitive way if the way that I like taught myself to connect with my intuition was to shame myself for when I didn't do that? Does that make sense? The sentence I just
yeah.
made? And so like being in the practice of like being okay with like it taking many, many, many tries for you to be able to compassionately listen to yourself and then take that action that comes from a place of curiosity and trust, as opposed to feeling bad that you didn't get it right again. And I'm saying this now too, because I'm really starting to see the subtlety of releasing the shame part and just trying it. Even if you fail 3 out of 4 times, that one time that you listen to yourself, that makes a difference. Mm. It's like stretching. It's like, it increases your capacity to make a different choice. And that's okay. That's great. That's part of the journey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the way you put that. I mean, at the end of the day, ultimately, we are the ones that know ourselves the best, you know, and in that is like having trust, you know, mm-hmm. trusting ourselves. Like, but there's so much, not just the internal, all the internal forces we're battling, the external stuff that we're fighting against and unconsciously just allowing into our spaces and allowing them to influence us, all the shoulds and the societal stuff and the cultural stuff, mm-hmm. Where ultimately I think like I know for me, like I want to trust myself more. Mm-hmm. I want to trust my instincts. Like you're saying, trust my intuition, trust mm-hmm. that I know what's best for me.
Yes, exactly.
It's hard to get there.
It's a practice.
It's a practice like anything. Yeah. That's really like, that's another theme that always comes up on the show is practice, right? Because I talk about empathy as a practice all the time. Mm-hmm. Because like so many things in life, Aaliyah, we take things for granted and we think they're a thing. And then we just label them as that one little simple thing in our heads. And we move on, right? And I think we need to do less of the moving on and more of just the sitting and exploring and asking the questions to create much more power within a simple concept as empathy or a simple concept of intuition, right? Like sitting with the thing to make the word so much more powerful and so many more avenues to explore, as opposed to like, okay, this is the thing, that's the box, let's move on.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's like asking for intimacy.
Mm.
You know, that kind
of. How do you mean?
It's. Intimacy is like closeness, it's vulnerability, it's curiosity, it's asking questions, it's a drawing in, it's a calling in. It's like, hey, what do you have to say? What are you sharing with me? And yeah, that's how I perceive intimacy, as like a calling in to understand deeper, to have deeper sense of like integration, to have a deeper sense of trust. Intimacy is all about trust too.
Mm.
So that's something that I always try to impart in my life. Anything that I, you know, if shaming doesn't work, if the willpower alone doesn't work, and then okay, so what is it that I need now? I need that sense of intimacy, that closeness, that awareness and presence. There's a card in tarot, the death card in tarot, and death as a card is not necessarily about physical death. It's really not about physical death. It's about a transformation, about a change. One of my other mentors, Lindsay Mack, who I know was on this podcast too, she described the death card and the experience of it as like this sacred fertilizer, this like compost, you know, for what comes next. And there's an aspect of death that requires presence, requires looking, requires seeing, requires being with what is. And so when trying to willpower your way through something, it doesn't work. If judging yourself doesn't work, then what needs to be there is that seeing, that face-to-face, and that openness is an act of intimacy with the, even with the hard stuff. We need that, you know?
Yeah. I love that. I really love that. I didn't think of it as, you know, the word intimacy, but it's you're totally spot on. I think that's a really, really important way to look at it. I like that a lot. So, you're in the space of astrology. We've talked about astrology on the show before. You know, you mentioned Lindsay Mack being on, and Lindsay coming on. Her second episode will be coming out, or will be out, you know, as of this recording. But tell me a little bit about like how, like your, I'm curious about your foray into like astrology and how you got into it and all that stuff, your origin story, so to speak, in astrology.
My dad is like an amateur astrologer.
Oh, wow.
He said he did it for me. Maybe he lost it, but apparently when he did like hand drawn natal charts for me, for my brother, himself, my mom, he might not have done it for me. It's fine. I was born 8 years after my brother. I understand if my dad was over, but my dad had like lots of like occult books and stuff around when I was growing up. And, you know, it wasn't anything he necessarily like shared with me as like teaching. We didn't really talk about it that much. But some of the books of his, I did like look at, and I remember I think he had this book that described, you know, all the signs, and there was like this one section for like the child, what the child version of each sign is like, what the children are like. And I remember reading the description for the Scorpio child and just Scorpio in general in this book. And it felt so resonant. I don't even know how old I was pretty young, single digit age. But some, like, I just like felt so, being a Scorpio just felt so resonant to me. It just felt so right. I know some people don't always feel like they identify with their sun sign, and a natal chart is complex, and so there's more to your astrology than just your sun sign. But that was like the first time that I felt that I like connected with astrology, and I really, really felt that connection. It felt very, very resonant. I didn't like get too into it formally until much later, until I was an adult, in my mid to late 20s. And I don't remember what it was exactly that got me into it again. You know, this like changing culture, like it just became more visible. Tarot, astrology, all that stuff is like much more visible in our culture, you know, starting in the 2010s, you know?
Yeah.
And I basically just kind of self-taught myself. I figured out that you're more than your sun sign, that you have your sun, there's your moon, there's your rising, there's your Mercury, there's all these different placements. And once I knew that, I was curious and I wanted to learn more, but learn more about the complexities of astrology. So I had some friends that were already into astrology and they were helpful teachers. And I have one friend, Kelsey Rose Tortorici, who's a co-founder of a place where I do a lot of my teaching, Inner Sense Healing Arts. They're like a really accessible great astrologer. And I just like got into it. I bought some books and I just would just like sit in. I remember very clearly, this is a silly anecdote, but after like breaking up with my ex and starting to be in the beginning of breaking up with my family, I just quit drinking recently. You know, I was kind of on my own in this kind of like liminal space. Still am in that liminal space, but it was at the beginning of the liminal space. I would just come home after my day job, smoke some weed, turn on. There's a channel that just shows Law and Order all day, basically. I would put Law and Order on in the background, and I'd pull out my book, and I would watch TV, and I would, like, you say, there'd be like a guest character or a certain actor, and I would like look at the way they're acting. I'd be like, oh, I wonder what their natal chart information is. And so if they're famous enough, I would just Google their name, that natal chart. So then I would just look at their natal chart and just start to like understand and see the different elements, how I could see it showing up in their acting or their characters. And that's how I started getting into it on my own. I've never really taken like too much formal training in astrology. It's just something that I've, when I get into something, when I'm really into it, I had the same kind of thing with tarot. Like once I found the language for tarot and astrology, I just like dive in, and I love that kind of like self-directed study that is just about like what's in front of you, you know, and just like kind of seeing how it works.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's how I got into it.
I love that. I love this idea. I mean, I love that the feeling of, and I've had this a number of times in my life, the feeling of, you know, getting into a thing and it just feeling so aligned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, this is meant to be here, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
It's like such a good feeling.
A switch is flipped. It's just like, oh yeah, there you go. I see you now.
Yeah. And oftentimes those things, you know, are avenues with which we can continue to grow ourselves, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The best versions of them, at least. Yeah. That's awesome. I'm so happy that you're doing that work. I'm always so in awe of thinkers in that space, and really just like the openness of our hearts to find healing through so many different mediums. I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. So keep doing you is what I'm saying.
That's all I can do.
Yeah, that's all you can do, because that's who you are. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, let's transition into our empathy heroes, Aaliyah. We always kind of wrap up the show talking about the people in our lives who are empathetic, compassionate, kind, feely people. They could be characters from stories we love, even, or movies, or Law and Order.
I don't watch Law and Order anymore, but
okay. Okay.
Weird shame about Law and Order. But anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. No. Sorry about bringing back up. I'm going to name my empathy hero first to give you a moment to think about your empathy hero. My empathy hero this week is the aforementioned Jessica Zucker, Dr. Jessica Zucker, who wrote this book called I Had a Miscarriage, a memoir of movement, it's called. That's the full title. And I read this book in a matter of like 3 days. It's not out yet. Well, it's out now, but as of this recording, it's out tomorrow, March 9th. So if you're listening to this, go pick it up. It's really, you know, as someone who is cisgendered man, biologically can't, you know, birth children, can't hold children in my womb. That doesn't matter. It's a eye-opening book about some of the stunning statistics around miscarriage. And it's a book about grief, which is something we can all empathize with, you know? Mm-hmm. Jessica talks in her book very vulnerably about having a miscarriage, 16-week miscarriage at home by herself. And it's, you know, awful and, you know, difficult, but such a stunning, beautiful work on what grief can be. And it's another thing and another piece of writing and energy out in the world that helps us to see things a little more clearer and helps destigmatize topics, which I appreciate. So Jessica Zucker is my empathy hero. Her book, I Had a Miscarriage, A Memoir, A Movement, is out now. I highly recommend it. Go pick it up. And that's me. How about you, Aaliyah? Who's your empathy hero?
I'm sure that there's like some sort of perfect pop cultural example that I could give, but right now that I'm sure later I'll be like, oh, I could have said that. what's coming to mind right now is a friend of mine I mentioned earlier as we were talking, Kelsey Tortorici. They, I stayed with them for a couple months this year at their place. And they're an Aries. They are an astrologer, Reiki master, yoga teacher, lots of things, human design person. And one of the things that the two of us have been talking a lot about in our relationship together is our ability to accept each other as we are, even with our differences, and to still love each other, and knowing how to like show up for each other without trying to fit each other into certain kinds of like boxes, or assuming that they will love us in the same way that we will try to love them, right? And so lately, I know that Kelsey has been navigating their relationships, like changes in their relationships, and navigating how to feel seen and how to be themselves full out while knowing that other people might not always appreciate their way of delivering things. I mentioned that they're an Aries for a reason, because Aries is a very kind of like brash, self-centered, and I don't say that in a judgmental way, self-centered kind of energy that people can assume is not empathetic, that isn't compassionate, that doesn't see how the other lives. And I've been just like really impressed with Kelsey's ability to navigate that strong, clear I am, which is the phrase for Aries, that I am energy, while also being able to hold such compassionate and skillful space for understanding the needs of other people too. And it shows up in their astrological work, their Reiki work, their yoga practice as well. And they're one of my closest friends too. So I feel really grateful to be in this kind of interesting dynamic with this person. Cause again, to quickly get into astrology talk, I'm a Scorpio. They're an Aries, you know, both Mars ruled energy. So intense, kind of can be kind of competitive, like we're similar in a lot of ways, but our expressions of ourselves are very different. And so they're a bit more loud and bold, and I'm could be a bit more reserved. And so us like finding each other and holding each other up and helping each other see new perspectives through our differences, not in spite, but because we have those differences, has been so illuminating and so freeing. And it feels so nice to feel so held by someone, and to have that, and to know that I can reach out and say, I need your I am perspective, and be able to get that kind of that juice, that wildness is so beautiful. And to be able to see them carry that in their empathy as well is so lovely to me. And I'm so grateful to be able to share that intimately with a friend.
Wow. Yeah, they sound amazing, and thank you for sharing that. Beautiful. I think it's what we need. I mean, for friendships, relationships, that's what we need. So grateful they are in your life, Aaliyah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. All right. So, Aaliyah, where can the Feely humans out there connect with you, learn more about the work you're doing, all that lovely stuff?
Yeah. You can find me. I post most often on social media on Instagram, and I'm there at Aaliyah Walston. And then my website is also AaliyahWalston.com. That's where you can find me.
Wonderful. Well, listeners, the links for those things are in the show notes for this episode at feelyhuman.co. Aaliyah, thank you so much for being a part of Yumi Empathy.
Thank you so much for having me. It was fun.
Yeah, you're very welcome. And to you listeners, as I always say, I'm here, you're here. We're here together on this wayward, overwhelming, awe-inspiring, pale blue dot. We have each other. It's Yumi Empathy.